moving up, moving out, moving along. Where are you headed next? I'm Christy Cassidy, your host and the creator of Moving Along, a podcast about travel, relocation, and life transitions. Listen in to real life stories as we explore moving along and what it takes to make your life a positive new adventure. Welcome to Moving Along. Walter Meyer is the founder and head of Property Invest Blog. He is a polyglot who was born in Belgium and now lives in London with his wife and two children. Along the way, he traveled extensively and lived for a while in Berlin, one of my favorite cities, Hamburg, and Barcelona. He's also traveled for business and pleasure to Australia and New Zealand, all around Europe, obviously, North and South America, and Hong Kong and China. We'll talk about his foray into Thailand, too, in a little bit. So Property Invest Blog is Walter's way of exploring real estate, living abroad, and more to the point, real estate as an investment. This is one of the reasons I wanted to talk to him. He has properties in London and Montenegro, and now, Thailand as well. Welcome, Walter.
Thank you so much, Christy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Walter, let me ask you, you grew up in Belgium. What did travel and moving mean to you as a child?
We didn't travel that much other than in the summer holidays, but it was something that I was really, really looking for. And I loved it. So we traveled very European style, continental European style by car. We drove all the way to South France. We explored Austria, which I really, really enjoyed, and parts of Italy. And I guess we did Switzerland as well. So from that point on, I really enjoyed getting to know different cultures, but especially, and that's probably why I'm here, why I've been traveling around, learning the languages.
And you're a natural, right? The languages came easily?
Yeah, well, coming from a small country like Belgium, you kind of have to learn other languages because, first of all, there's not that many that speak my mother language, which is Flemish, which is kind of like Dutch. So half an hour going to the west, you're in France from where I grew up. So we learn French, learn German, we learn English, and then you just keep going.
Did you go hiking? Is that what you did a lot when you were traveling about?
Yes, that was something that my parents really enjoyed. And they did that with us from when we were very, very young children. They took us on hikes. I remember when I was four, I remember seeing pictures of when I was 4 years old and going on hikes. We always stayed somewhere close to the water. So we loved going in the lakes, play in the sea. So yeah, it was always a good bit of a combination of water and mountains.
Nice. And you have brothers and sisters?
Yes, I have two sisters. I'm in the middle. And yeah, they're quite close in age. So we used to do everything together, especially in the holidays.
Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
In your experience, what are the main reasons that people want to move out of their home countries? Talk about your experience too, deciding to go to London.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe I have to look back even more to the first time that I moved to Berlin. Berlin was really the first time that I moved by myself as an exchange student. And my first push to get out of the country was that I just wanted to explore. I wanted to see more of the world. I like Belgium, Belgian people are nice, but it was just like, it wasn't enough for me. I wanted to get out there. And I told my parents that when I was 17, I remember, okay, I'm not going to stay here. I'm going to go study in the big city because I went to Brussels to study.
rather than a lot of people going to Leuven or to Ghent, which is a little bit smaller and more university cities. But I went to Brussels. So then I moved to Berlin. And after being an exchange student in Berlin, I liked it so much. I said, after my studies, I'm going back. And that's what I did. I went back and I just, kept exploring and saw a lot more of the world after that.
Oh, that's nice. But you didn't stay in Europe. You decided to go to London, to the UK. What drew you?
That was a little bit of a coming together of circumstances. It was not my first choice.
Oh.
I was not thinking of London for that, but it was actually my wife who was coming here to study. And then when you get here, I have to add that my wife is originally from Hong Kong. So she's Asian, but she also grew up in Canada and then spent a lot of time in Europe already before we met. And then we got to London, and being a couple from different cultures, from different backgrounds, being in London, just we felt so comfortable and we were just like, oh my God, this is amazing. Because she was studying, we soon had friends from all over the world that were here in London. And we were like, oh, this is great. We then, for her job, after studying, we moved back to Germany for a little while.
Ah.
We went to a small town, to Nuremberg, a smaller town in South Germany. And we felt lost. We were like, oh my God, no, this is not for us anymore. It's like, we have to go back. And within 6 months, we were back in London. We haven't really left ever since. And that's probably close to 20 years now.
Wow. But your children are still small.
Yes. They're 9 and 12 now. So they're born here. So not that small.
Not that small.
So they're born here and they're also feeling very comfortable here.
Good education.
Good education, yeah.
So somewhere along the line, I read that you were interested in Southern Europe. You wanted to buy a place in Southern Europe, and you settled on Montenegro. And what was that thought process? Forget the thought process. What was the process? Did you have a methodology at that point, or made it up as you went along?
No, I think I also have to go back to the time when we then moved to Spain. So I remember being in Portugal, walking around in Lisbon before we actually decided to move to Spain. And I was like, oh my God, I love this vibe. I love the vibe of Southern Europe. And it's just like, and of course the weather and the food and the people. This is great. And then we were lucky enough. We had the opportunity to go to Barcelona and live there for 2 years. I really enjoyed it. A great time to be there. And later on, when I had the chance to invest, to look into buying property, I was looking into Spain and France and Italy, the usual places that people would first look, maybe especially when you come from America, that's the ones that you know. But there's a price tag when you go to these places. And I wasn't in a position to invest that much. So I looked further and I've been to countries in the Balkans as well, Croatia, Slovenia. I've been to Macedonia and then, of course, Montenegro. And then I started reading about Montenegro. I started speaking to people over there, meeting with real estate agents and watching YouTube videos about Montenegro. And there's something about that. And I think maybe that comes from my childhood, what I've just discussed was the water in the mountains. And that's exactly what Montenegro is. It's like you have the water and you have the mountains right next to it. And it's beautiful. It's just an idyllic place to be in. And then it's also an up-and-coming country. So you know that when you're buying there, the value of the property is going to go up in the next few years. Montenegro is most likely going to join the EU in the next couple of years. And there's so much going on over there. There's developments being built. The infrastructure is improving. And I like that. I like that in a country that there's a project. It's a stable country in terms of politics and so on. And I was intrigued by that.
Did you
originally think you would use it as a vacation getaway, or just it was always in your mind as investment property?
It was a bit of a combination, yes. Thinking about, yes, holiday property at some point for us, but then also to rent it out during the year. So a little bit of both.
Did you have any hard lessons?
Not so far. I think maybe the one that I had to get used to being in London and having lived here for a long time. I rented here. I'm a landlord myself, so I rent out a flat. And looking for people to rent your flat, it's easy and quick. There's so many people here. There's so much interest in renting a flat in London. And of course, that's very different in Montenegro. There's not that turnaround that you have over here. So that was something that I had to get used to. And I'm like, okay, in the winter months, so if I don't have a long-term tenant, then okay, it has to be okay that the flat will be empty for a bit. And then of course, when spring comes, summer months, then it's easier to find a tenant. So that's something that I had to get used to.
Do you have a caretaker or do you go back and forth yourself?
Yes, I have a caretaker and a property manager over there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing you recommend for people who want to buy investment properties abroad?
Most definitely, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. It's worth the cost when you're just paying maybe, in dollars 50 or $100 per month, and just for someone to look after the property. And then a lot of these people also help with renting out property, and then they just take a percentage, which is totally worth it. Just takes a lot of worry away from you when you're not there, you cannot, if there's an issue with the fridge, or an issue with the boiler, you can't manage that. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely recommend it, yes.
So you also do short-term rentals, like through VRBO or through some other rental exchange?
Yes. It's a very good way to get some rental income, especially over the summer months. Mm-hmm.
Not just longer term. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to think if I should add some lessons learned from the buying process.
Good idea, because I was going to ask what's the most important thing people should know about doing this, but lessons learned from the buying process would be great.
Yeah, definitely. So as I said before, I started speaking to real estate agents. I started speaking to people over there who have expertise. Sometimes it's not enough to just speak to the real estate agents. You also want to speak to someone who's done it, someone who's bought property over there. And sometimes I've actually found people through YouTube, someone who's posting videos about buying property abroad, about moving to, or who spent like a few years in Montenegro. And I reached out and they're just like, oh yeah, happy to help, to tell you about our experience. And that was very helpful. So you do that, and then you speak to local people, local real estate agent, but then also a specialist property lawyer. That I think is key in the whole buying process, especially in a country like Montenegro, where there's still quite a lot of illegal housing. Mm-hmm. So housing that hasn't really been registered. The government is trying to do something about that, but it's still early days. So you need to have a trusted lawyer who can look through the paperwork and say, okay, this property is fine. This is okay. It's all good. So yes, I would do that. And then I think inspection of the, that's maybe something that is sometimes overlooked, or people would actually go for a minor inspection and look at how the walls are and how if the kitchen is okay, if the water pressure is okay, those kind of things. But I would go a little bit further. I would always recommend to pay a little bit more for a proper surveyor to even have a look at how the pipes are running, how the roof of the building is, and all those things. Maybe even speak to the developer of the building if it's a slightly new build. So that's definitely something that I would recommend. And maybe lastly, if it's possible, it's something that we probably should have done better when we bought our flat here in London is to speak to the neighbors. I mean, it's hard when you're not there, of course. But you do need to do your trips to go out there. Speak to the neighbors and find out, is there anything going on in the street? Are you getting along with everyone? It's hard. It's hard to know from a few conversations, but still, it's a good way to find out if you'll feel comfortable living there.
I've wondered if you recommended that people go to the place and rent on their own and kind of get a sense of the landscape or the cityscape as it is, talk to the neighbors, just to see the different neighborhoods even or different areas. Do you think that's a good idea? Do it, go yourself first, or just kind of trust the realtor?
I would say most definitely to go there yourself. I think, people that I speak to or tour reading my blog and interacting with me a little bit, they say, okay, we're looking to buy something there, but we've been there on holidays for many years in a row. So we know the place. And then I'm like, okay, fine. But for someone who's never been to, let's say, Barcelona or somewhere in Spain, and they just say, okay, let's just buy something there and then go for it, I think that's very risky. I would definitely not recommend that.
Mm-hmm. Also, don't you usually have to show some kind of investment in the country? Don't you have to put money in a bank or get a number or something, an identification number? Is that true everywhere?
Yes, that applies everywhere. Yes. You need to get some kind of ID number or social security number. It depends from country to country, but yes, you always need to have something. And a local bank account is good. So either way, being in the country a little bit before you actually make the purchase is always good. Mm-hmm. You're able to.
Are there issues with, like in your situation where you live in one place, this is London's your primary place of residence, and then you have these other, I mean, they're not in the EU yet, Montenegro, right? Yeah. So, but you're not in the EU either. So thank you, Brexit. So are there any issues with that kind of thing where you're here, but your properties are elsewhere?
Not really. No. Of course, I can always still use my Belgian passport and go to places with my Belgian passport. So that is helpful. And going through a buying process with a British passport, it just involves a little bit more paperwork, but it's not a big hiccup. It's not a major issue.
Do you get Americans and Canadians contacting you?
Yes, I do. They're very interested in, just very excited to talk about different locations, and I get two different types of people coming to me. And there's one that really likes to do the country hopping. So they like to just go from one country to another and probably just use my blog to, okay, which are these locations that we should explore. Of course, I've got a few countries in South America that I cover as well, which is quite attractive, quite useful for Americans, Canadians. It's easy to get to. And then the second type of the second group of people are the people who are properly looking to buy in a certain place. Mm-hmm. And then they just come to me and they're just like, okay, I read your blog about this location. Maybe they even have a different location that I haven't covered yet. I cannot cover all of them. So, and they just ask me, can I just get some input? And I do consultations with them. And just to talk through the process and help them along the way.
Mm-hmm. There's two different ways we can go here. I'm going to ask you about the gentrification first. It seems to me, and I have some friends who this gentrification is a big issue, right? It's a big issue in the States. I'm sure it's an issue elsewhere. But it seems to me that when Americans get interested in a place like Ireland or Portugal, all of a sudden the place is flooded. And the issues of gentrification arise, and there's a lot of fisticuffs. Let's put it that way. But what is your experience with that?
I would say I have a couple of locations in South America where it's mostly Americans moving there.
Mm. I think, yes, maybe there's certain areas where it's just too many Americans, Americans and Canadians, and you just feel like you're just back home again. On the other hand, most of the time it helps with getting used to the new country, and it helps to just have a little bit of a network mm-hmm. of fellow Americans, let's say here, and just being able to talk about the issues that you have when you first move there, talk about the process of going through visa applications, potentially buying property, and I think it's more of a plus than it would be a disadvantage. Of course, there's a few, as I mentioned, there's a few places where you say, okay, maybe there's just too many people there. Mm,
Mexico City, that's another one I've heard kind of getting overrun.
Is it? Okay.
It doesn't mean that it is. That's what I've heard. It's an easy place for Americans to go, obviously. So taxes. Okay, now we're going to go back. Taxes. Let's talk about taxes. What is the stamp tax?
Oh, the stamp duty tax in the UK?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's a government tax that is just put on you when you buy property. Mm-hmm. It's just one of those things. You have to take it into account. You have to know it when you budget buying property in the UK. And it's just, it's a percentage. I don't remember exactly. I think it depends how much the property costs. The percentage depends on that. So it's something that you just have to know. But
are there other hidden costs that people should be aware of when they're looking outside their home countries?
Yes. I think tax is a big one. So always do your research on what's the property transfer tax. Is there a yearly tax that you have to pay, which there usually is. In places like Montenegro, it's quite a low amount, which is great. Then in terms of hidden costs, I would say the currency exchange. That is always a tricky one. And I've been in touch with a company that has offices in London, in France, and in the US. They're very good at helping Americans with these exchanges. It's not an app or anything like that. So you actually get to speak to someone in person. I've written about it in my blog as well. And it's so much better that you can speak to someone and you just know what to expect. You can lock in an exchange and make sure that you don't lose that much money, that you don't just do bank transfers. And some people might still do that. Just bank transfer to all the way to Europe or the UK, even it would just, there would be so much money lost. And whilst we were talking about tax, obviously US tax still applies when you move abroad. I'm not aware of how much that is or how that affects people, but I just know from American friends here in London that's still something to look out for. And other than that, maybe insurance is a good one to mention. It's something that, yes, you might think of, but you probably will pay a little bit more for insurance here because you want to be covered for travel and health insurance. If you want insurance for your home, even when you're renting, that's definitely something I guess you should take into account.
I noticed that you have a lot of wonderful resources on the blog. It's like a whole page of links and things that you recommend, places that you recommend for people who are even considering this move or this lifestyle, if you will. We've talked about being an absentee landlord, but I'm sure there are issues now and then that if you have a great caretaker and you have contacts, that's one thing. I think for some people, this would be a whole new way of perceiving the world as a landlord.
Yes.
There's different challenges.
Yes, definitely.
Let's talk about Thailand. What is going on there? You've got something, you said you had your eye on this place for even before you ever went to Thailand, right?
You
probably, I don't know if you got the White Lotus over there, but everybody here watched the White Lotus with those gorgeous, gorgeous Thai landscapes and flowers and trees.
But where was it? Where was it based exactly? Do you know?
Good question. I don't know. It was at a resort. I don't know offhand. Well, yeah.
So I've been to Thailand a few times, to Bangkok and a little bit more south. I spent quite some time in Malaysia as well for work quite a while ago. But one place that really intrigues me is Chiang Mai in Thailand. It's again a place that has the mountains. I think I'm drawn to the mountains. It doesn't necessarily have the water. It's not next to the sea. It's not next to any big lakes from what I know. Over time, I've made some connections over there. There's quite some Americans, British, and Europeans that have moved there or are digital nomads over there and are just moving around. It's a place that seems very peaceful, just very peaceful, very calm. It has lovely climate all year round. It's not as bad as some places in the south where it can get really, really hot. So it never gets super hot, never gets cold either. So it's a place that I'm really drawn to. And I've been looking into buying a condo over there, maybe a studio or maybe a one bed. And that would be very much as an investment. Mm-hmm. So it would be an investment to rent it out. With the amount of digital nomads going over there, it's quite easy to rent out condos, just sometimes even for longer term, 3 to 6 months. And so it's an attractive investment, mm-hmm. I would say.
Not too many bugs.
I've also read that it's actually quite okay over there. Maybe it is because it's close to the mountains and it's not super hot. So it's relatively okay.
That's nice. It seems like you have your eyes on the whole world, right? And a couple questions. One is, where are you going next? And the other one is, what are you looking at next as a potential investment? Some place that's ripe for investment, but maybe you feel has been underinvested.
Yeah, I think for the moment, I'm physically going to be in London for a few more years with the children.
The children.
Growing up here and going to school here. I do think that we will stay here until they graduate and then see where it takes them. I'm intrigued by China, Hong Kong and China, the places we go to every year, at least once a year. One of my blog posts that's actually been quite popular is about Shenzhen.
Mm.
Shenzhen is a very big city just right next to Hong Kong, but of course in mainland China. It's a city that is quite new. I was actually there more than 20 years ago and then have been there just a year ago. And the transformation is just, it's insane. Just the amount of new developments that have just popped up, and there's still space. They're still going up. And if I had the spare change, or a little bit more than that, I would probably look into Shenzhen. I'm quite intrigued by that place. But in terms of me personally looking into places that I think I would really like, I haven't necessarily been to all of these places, are the places that I've written about in South America.
Ah.
So there's Cuenca in Ecuador.
Yep.
Which is it's a popular one. I don't know if you...
I do. I interviewed a friend of mine who moved down there, and she just sung its praises. Just loves it there and loves the affordability and the community. There is an expat community, but she also learns the language. I agree with you about that expat community being important. There's some kind of community where maybe you can share the language and share information. I mean, I think that's true no matter where you're going.
And then if you're already moving abroad, I think you must have that interest to learn about the other culture. I mean, why would you move otherwise? You want to pick up the language then when you're there. I think it's such a great thing to do. probably even more so for older people to just keep your brain going and just like learning languages. Oh. I know my mom continues learning languages in her 70s.
How wonderful. Right? Yeah, I think even if you just want to go to the market and do some grocery shopping, you better learn some of the language. Yeah, sure. Exactly. So Cuenca and Ecuador, yes.
Yep, we've got Cuenca and Ecuador and Medellin in Colombia. Mm-hmm. That's also explored and written about. And I think that they both sound lovely and not too busy yet, not too busy with expats yet. Mm-hmm. And affordable, like you said before. I think that's something that attracted me to Montenegro. It's affordable. I just go grab a coffee here in central London and pay way too much.
£5. Yeah.
And yes. It's just no, that's just not right. So that's a big thing. I have an interesting or funny anecdote about learning languages.
Yes.
So before we moved, we were living in Hamburg at that time, and we were going to move to Barcelona. So, okay, we're very excited. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to start learning Spanish. So I learned Spanish, take some courses and learn a bit by myself. Not to a very high level, but just a decent level. Could have a little bit of conversations, probably order something. And then I get to Barcelona and I listen to the people, the locals around me, and they speak Catalan. And I'm like, oh no, this is terrible. And I think the first week we moved there, our car broke down and I had to go bring the car and explain what was wrong. And there they didn't even speak Spanish. No, most people do speak Spanish over there, but still the going language over there is Catalan.
So
from that day on, I started watching a lot of football, love soccer, with Catalan commentary, and I was like, okay, that's how I'm going to learn it.
What a great way to learn. The football. Okay, we should tell people you have a degree. Your bachelor's degree is in translation. So, yes. Is your wife a polyglot too?
Oh, she is.
Oh, how wonderful. And what languages do your children speak?
We started speaking our mother tongues to them when they were little, and until they then both started going to school. And then they started speaking English to each other, and then it's just started going downhill. Because I speak English to my wife as well, so then it just, we kind of stopped, but still they have the languages, so they still continue to learn Chinese. My mother tongue is not really something that they have, but it's something that is kind of in the back of their brain cells somewhere.
Right. Do you travel with them?
We do. I wanted to talk about moving and traveling with children as well, if that's okay.
Please.
So I'll start talking about our experience of going back to Hong Kong, which we've now done for... for almost 4 years, we've gone back in the summer and at Christmas. And especially in the summer, it was for quite a long period of time. It was 4 to 6 weeks. And that's a long time for children to be away from home. So I think when we did that the first few times, I don't think we approached it in the right way. We just went there and we thought, okay, we're just going to figure it out when we get there and just do a bit of activities, maybe find a camp. And then I think we found some Chinese language camp for a little bit, but it was all a little bit up in the air. And one of my daughters has a bit of anxiety for certain things. So that was actually really hard for her. And that will bring me to the move. But I'll first finish my train of thought here, is that then later on, when we went to Hong Kong, we started planning it much better. And we're like, okay, our daughter over here, she swims. Okay. She swims 4 times a week. We should keep doing that. We should still do that over there. So we looked for a swim lesson, like a swim coach and then a group that she could swim with. And then for my son who plays tennis, and we're like, okay, let's find a coach for him. and let's find again some groups that he can play with and find a bit of a routine. And I think that is the key word for children. Also when you move, but when you travel, is to just keep a bit of a routine, keep their activities going. And otherwise you're going to make it really hard for yourself.
That's right. That's the parents in charge.
Yeah, exactly. So moving with children, I think it's the same. Just keeping that routine, keeping some kind of continuity, having some similar food that you have at home, same bedtime. And I think before you move with children, you need to really speak to them properly, even when they're under 9, under 7s. They're very young, but they need to know. They need to know what's going to happen. I think especially with the older children, is involve them in the process to make them make certain decisions, not the big ones, but just some small decisions here or there, and say like, oh, if we move there, okay, these are the schools. Do you want to have a look at these different schools? Which one do you like better? And in the end, and yeah, let them make that choice if it works for you, of course. So yeah, that's what I would recommend for children.
That's great advice, especially moving to a place maybe where the language is different.
Yes. One of your questions initially was also, how much does it actually cost to move?
Yeah. I asked that. How much does it cost?
I don't know if you want me to try to estimate that. I did do some research and I was...
Yeah, I want to hear.
I mean, I can put out some numbers that I would say would be anywhere between $10,000 and $25,000
to move.
Of course, it could be less when you're just a single person and you're not moving all your furniture with you. Mm-hmm. Be more if it's a full family and you're moving your entire household, including pets, including cars. Okay, that's might then be more. But that's something to think about. So I think something to consider when you're moving your belongings is that shipping furniture is expensive.
Uh-huh. So don't do it, right?
If you don't have to, then don't do it.
No. Just buy locally.
Buy locally.
Or buy something furnished?
Yes, that's a possibility too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can specify that to the real estate agent and say, okay, I'd like to find something furnished. So the shipping can give you a really high cost.
Mm-hmm.
Necessarily want that. Then on top of that, you have the travel cost, which is nothing unexpected. Housing costs, of course, if you want to rent first, you have to consider a little bit of a deposit. Mm-hmm. There might be sometimes here in London, I think there's an ask for a deposit of more than 1 month. It's 3 months.
Oh, wow.
Even 6 months. So, mm-hmm. So you have to take that into consideration, that might be a big cost beforehand. And then a bit of admin costs, visa and legal costs, definitely be a few thousand. You would probably have to have some kind of consultant that helps you with that, mm-hmm. which is also a bit of a cost. And then I think, the hidden costs we already talked about earlier. And that's pretty much it. That's what I had. Maybe the last point was a starting life cost. You have to get started somewhere.
Right.
And you might not be working for the first few months. You might just, even if you have a job, you might just be too busy settling in. And so you have to, put aside a bit of a contingency budget for those first few months.
So you think all told, including those costs, 10 to 25 or 10 to 25 plus those other costs?
No, including.
Including. Those. That seems, more reasonable than one might at first think. Yeah. Wow. Well, thank you. That's really helpful. And it kind of opens up the world in a way that I think sometimes it just seems impossible to get from here to the next town, let alone here to Shandong or, but, yeah. And I don't think, are people allowed to buy property in China? Maybe not yet.
Yes.
Oh, yes, they are.
But only one property.
Oh,
and And you cannot, as a foreigner, you cannot rent it out.
Ah, okay. So you'd have to go there and live.
So you have to go live there. Uh-huh. Yes.
Interesting.
Which I think you would do if you buy something in China, you might want to explore, get to know the culture there for a little bit.
Yeah. And if you were studying there's a lot of things you could be doing there, right?
Exactly.
Yes. Interesting.
Yes. Yeah, so there's probably a lot of unknowns that stop people from making that move that they've been thinking about. Maybe the cost is something that holds people back, but that's something that I can help with. I can talk people through the process so that maybe they're not so scared or taken aback to making that move.
Well, thank you. And so can people get in touch with you through Property Invest blog?
Yes. They can just go to the contact page. I think they can find my email address there.
That's the best place. Okay. Well, we'll definitely put that in the show notes, obviously, links to the blog and to the contact page for sure. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Walter. I really appreciate your time and doing the numbers for, especially for those Americans going, there's no way in hell I'd be able to go to Montenegro. Oh, you never know.
As well, I was just like, okay, let me just put some numbers together. Yeah. It's possible.
It is possible.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening. I'm Christy Cassidy, your host. We'll be back next time with more stories of travel, relocation, and life transitions on Moving Along. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Free audio post-production by Alphonic.com.